I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica. And this is All Things Sensory by Harkla.
We are both certified occupational therapy assistants, and together with Harkla, we are on a mission to empower parents, therapists, and educators to help raise confident and strong children of all abilities.
On this podcast, we chat about all things sensory, diving into special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, overall health and wellness, and so much more.
We are here to provide raw, honest, and fun strategies, ideas, and information for parents, therapists, and educators, as well as other professionals to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back to another podcast episode. You're listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica. And today we are talking to Amira, and we have had her on the podcast before. She is an incredible human. She has so much knowledge. She has so much passion. And we decided to invite her back on the podcast because she is doing something really amazing, something different than what she was doing last time we talked to her. And we wanted to share her knowledge with you.
Yeah, it's definitely a niche topic that she's focusing on, but it honestly applies to everyone. We're going to be talking about money today, y'all, which is weird.
I know, we're a sensory podcast, and yet we're going to talk about money today.
Because it fits with the occupational therapy world that we're immersed in. Mm-hmm. So stick around, hang out, grab a cocktail, grab a cup of coffee, whatever floats your boat, and let's chat with Amira.
Okay.
Welcome back, Amira. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to get to talk to you both again.
Yes, I'm excited for today's topic. But first, we're going to ask you our secret questions. And we're actually going to ask you the same ones that we asked you last time you were on the podcast.
Okay, let's do it.
We're going to compare your answers.
All right.
Okay, the first one. Would you rather hold a hot light bulb in your hand for 5 minutes or sit in a freezer for 5 minutes?
Sit in a freezer for 5 minutes.
Okay.
Same answer as before.
I still prefer the cold.
Yes. I love it.
Versus burning your hands.
I need my hands.
Yes. Okay. What is your favorite way to de-stress?
I'm still going to go with sitting on the couch and watching a Lifetime movie. I don't know actually if that's what I said last time.
I mean, close. Last time you said take a nap.
Lifetime movies do lead to a nap. So
there you go.
I like it.
Relaxing on the couch. I love it. I just asked that one.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, no.
What does your morning routine look like?
Ooh, this one's a little different now. So not every morning, but my favorite morning routine is when I get to wake up, have a slow morning, and walk to Pilates, and then I walk home, and I have breakfast, and then I start my day a little bit later. So that's 2 days a week I get to do that now, and it has been a game changer. It feels so good to just wake up, and like 2 days of the week I get to do something just for myself. It's really nice.
That sounds amazing.
That's perfect. Yes.
Last time you said walk your dog, do your skincare, have a glass of orange juice, and have breakfast.
Yes. So all that still happens after. Yes. I go to Pilates and move my body.
I love it. I love it.
Okay. Do you prefer pancakes or waffles?
Oh, this is such a hard choice. I'm going to go with waffles. Definitely waffles.
That's what you said last time too.
I love waffle makers at a hotel. That's like my favorite thing ever. Okay.
What's your favorite topping on the waffles?
Yeah, I'm not a big toppings person. I just prefer to have it just a little bit of butter and syrup, and that's about it. Too much, and then it gets too sweet, and then I feel like I'm eating dessert for breakfast, which yes. is okay sometimes. Sometimes that is warranted.
Okay, our last question, our most favorite one of all. What is your sensory quirk?
Oh, yeah. I am a huge sensory seeker, particularly deep pressure. I have to sleep with a heavy pillow over my head, but you all gave me a heavy eye mask last time, and I love it. So I still have that.
I'm so glad.
But I do love my pillow.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what you said last time, was that you sleep with a weighted blanket and a pillow on top of your head.
And I have to like carve out my little air hole to breathe.
Oh my God.
I still have to do it.
That is
what does your husband say when you're like covering your face with a pillow?
he thinks it's pretty quirky. He's like, wow. He got me even a heavier weighted blanket. And I'm like, no, I still have to have the pillow over my head. I can't sleep without it. I just can't.
That is so funny. Good night, honey, as I like shut my head under the pillow. Yep.
Once the pillow goes on top, he knows, all right, she's done.
Oh my gosh. That's
into the sleep she goes.
It's perfect. I love it.
Oh man.
All right, Amira, now that we have rehashed all of your deepest, darkest secrets, can you tell our listeners who you are and what you do and why you do it?
Yes. So my name is Amira. I am a pediatric occupational therapist, and I live and work in Phoenix, Arizona, working in early intervention. And that is what I have been doing since I graduated about almost three years ago now from OT school. And I love it. I love what I get to do every day. I will say we are actually still virtual. Oh my gosh. When I recorded this, we were virtual, and we are still virtual. When I recorded with y'all the first time, we were still virtual, and we are still virtual now 2 years later. So this is the virtual EI life, and it's been an adjustment, but our kids are still making progress. Our families are still rolling with us, and everything is really going well.
Awesome.
So you said before we started recording that you just finished a session with a kiddo, and so that was all virtual.
It was all virtual. They had their camera up, and the kiddo was playing with cups and blocks, and we were working on fine motor skills. We were talking about some behavioral things that are going on, some sensory things that are going on, and so a lot of parent coaching. And then I would observe and say, hey, let's try this. I mean, we were playing with like a shape sorter, and so I had the parent put the shape sorter on the floor, and then they put the shape on top, and the little kiddo had to push it into the hole. So it's a mix of a lot of different things, a lot of observations and making, recommendations in the moment, and then kind of talking about things that have been going on since the last time I met with the family.
Totally. Do you miss in-person therapy?
Oh, I do. I mean, I'm a peds OT to my core. So it's hard to be like interacting with the kids on screen. I will say some of them actually do. Like, we'll sing, like we sang If You're Happy, You Know It, like 3 times just now, because she really loved it and she was clapping along with us and it was great. But I miss being hands-on and I miss being with the kids, but it's still very valuable. Virtual is still very valuable. And I think it also increases the parent carryover, because they're having to kind of actually be our hands now and making sure that they're implementing those strategies. So I think in a way it's a blessing in disguise, but I miss being with kids in person so much.
That's definitely what we were noticing as well, was that the parent carryover was so much better because they were in it. They were 100% understanding what we were doing and why we were doing it. And I feel like it made our skills as therapists better, because we had to explain everything we were doing to get the families to understand, oh, this is why we're providing this amount of assistance, or this is why we're doing that. So I think that was really valuable when we were doing teletherapy.
Exactly. And I think it was good, though. I had about 6 months of in-person practice when I graduated, and then that was it. So I've been doing this, I've been doing virtual longer than I was ever in person, but I think it was good because I do feel very confident in explaining what it is that I'm doing and, you know, coaching the parents on the strategies and the hands-on techniques, because I got to experience that in person first. But I can't imagine graduating and then just starting out virtual. And I know that's the case for some graduates, and I'm like, kudos to you, because I feel like that would be so, so tricky.
Definitely.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. So the last time we chatted, we were strictly just chatting about EI, early intervention. Today, we're having you back because you kind of transitioned into a new role, which is a money coach. So tell us how you got started in that journey and a little bit more about it.
Yes. Okay. So where do I start with all of this? So when I started my Instagram page, I was really just talking about life as a newish grad pediatric therapist in early intervention. And it was fun. It was great. And I was enjoying it. And then I started doing what's called Money Mondays. And I started doing this because I was getting some questions about, you know, just money things. And I was like, whoa, people are asking me this. Okay, but I'm going to talk about it. And so I started being just open and transparent about my student loan debt and the income that I was making, how to negotiate. And I found that every single time I talked about something, I just had more and more questions. And I realized there was this major gap between what we had learned in graduate school to be, you know, therapists, and what we really needed to know to navigate all areas of our life. Like, we're not just therapists. We are so much more. We're, you know, spouses and parents, and we want to start businesses, and we have to have, you know, some of these foundational things, and money is such a huge part of that. And yes, we love our jobs, but we want to get paid well to do it. And so I realized, like I said, that there was this gap, and I realized I didn't see a lot of people talking about it, especially not a lot of people in our professions of therapy. And I was like, I think we should change this. And so I had to get uncomfortable, and it was very uncomfortable, and I had to get comfortable doing it, but I did. And it's just blossomed into something that I could have never imagined today. That's for sure.
I love it because you're so point on when you say that nobody talks about money. It's such an uncomfortable topic for so many people because we've been conditioned to not talk about how much we're paid and not talk about raises. And so it is an uncomfortable topic, but you're changing that narrative.
Trying to. Trying to do my part.
So how did you get started, like, as a money coach? Did you do any, like, CEUs, any training? Is this just how you were raised, that you've learned to just be really good with your money? What does that journey look like?
So quite the opposite. And I have found with a lot of people, this has been the case, is that we didn't grow up having these conversations about money. And then I was in the educational system for 20 plus years, and I never learned about money in school. And then you get out and you're handed this paycheck, and it's like, oh great, I'm making money, but like, what do I do with it? I want to be smart with my money. I want to make good money decisions. And I realized that I didn't know where in the world to start. Like, they tell you to just budget, and I'm like, okay, but like, what am I supposed to be looking for in this budget? And so I felt like there was no clear guidance on where you should get started when you are ready to take the leap. And the thing that I found for most people is that they know it's important to manage their money, and they know it's important to like get out of student loan debt. They know it's important to be investing for their retirement, but you don't know where to start, especially when you come out of school and you have so much student loan debt. And so what I really wanted to do is figure out, how do I just get started? And so I started with just researching, just good old Google, YouTube, and Investopedia. That was one of my other ones that I really liked. So I nailed down a couple of different resources that I liked. And then anytime I heard a word, I would just click it up. Like, for example, I had no idea what a 401k was. And I was like, what is this thing that people talk about? What are these letters and numbers? I think I'm supposed to have one, but I don't have one. And so I just actually Googled, and I was like, what is a 401k? And then that kind of leads you into more and more definitions. So I really started this journey with just a ton of research. And then that led me to people in the personal finance space on Instagram. And that was kind of a huge shift for me, because up until this point, I only followed other therapists. And so I wasn't very plugged into the personal finance community. And once I found them on Instagram, I was like, wait a minute, there's a lot of people who are like, you know, young people, and they're talking about this, and they're so relatable, and they make it so simple and easy. So I just found a lot of people on the Instagram personal finance world that I started to learn even more from. And so they would say something, and I'd be like, okay, let me go look that up. And then I would figure that out. So I think that's really where it all started, is just wanting to learn how to take that first step. And the first step for me was having to just learn the lingo. There's so much terminology out there. I just had to start there.
Wow. That's amazing.
I just like that you were like, oh, I wonder what that is. And instead of asking somebody else to give you the definition, you took it into your own hands and Googled, and probably learned so much more from doing that than you would have if you had just asked somebody to answer the question for you.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, I was tired of not knowing. I think I just got to this point where I was just so fed up and frustrated and sick and tired of feeling like I don't know what I'm doing with my own money. Like, here I am working really hard to make my own money, and then I don't know what to do with it. And I didn't like feeling that way. And so a lot of people will say, well, did you start out with like a financial advisor? And the answer is no, because, and I have a lot of thoughts on financial advisors, but the answer to that is no, I actually didn't start off with a financial advisor, because I didn't want to be in that situation where, okay, now I'm going to go sit down with somebody. They're saying words that I don't know what they mean. They're talking in circles around me, and I'm just smiling and nodding along like, yeah, yeah, I understand. And I don't. And so I didn't want to pay someone to tell me how to, again, manage my own money when I knew that, like, I sat through 3 years of OTD school. Like, I can figure out what I'm doing with my money. Like, it can't be that hard, but it's definitely something where you have to research, and you have, it's a skill. And just like with any skill that you want to get better at, you have to practice.
Mm-hmm. You literally just described me sitting down with my financial advisor, like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you dumb it down a little bit? Like, what is that?
I know. Now I'm so curious. I want to know your thoughts on financial advisors.
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's exactly what I call it, that smile and nod situation where you really don't know what's going on. And as a person, like, I am a little bit more on the passive side, just in general in nature. And I used to be very passive. I am not so much anymore. And I will ask the question at the drop of a hat, but I did not used to be this way when I first started out. And I knew I was going to be sitting there with all these questions and I knew I was going to ask. So I didn't want to use a financial advisor. Fees aside, because the fees are brutal and I don't think you should have to pay somebody that much money to be managing your money when you can do it yourself. But that aside, like I said, I just wanted to form that foundation for myself. So I encourage anyone, if you want to get better with your money, whether you choose to sit down and pay somebody to talk about it is entirely a personal decision. That's why they say personal finance is personal, but you still have to have that foundation for yourself. I strongly believe that.
Okay. I love that. So this is a podcast geared towards parents, therapists, and educators. We do have a lot of therapists listening. So why do you feel like this topic is so important specifically for therapists?
Because we're not just therapists. We have so much more that we have to consider. But that aside, I know that when we feel more confident in certain areas of our lives, that impacts our ability to show up for ourselves and for our clients. And so if you think about, like, you're not, you know, satisfied maybe with the income that you're making and you're going to work and you're underpaid because you didn't negotiate because nobody taught you how, and you took a lowball offer because you didn't know because nobody talks about what they're making. And so you're being underpaid. And so you're working extra hard because you're trying to make the money because you've graduated with all these student loan debt and like you want to get out of it because maybe you want to buy a house or you just don't want to have that weight on you. And so all of these things are happening. And that's when we kind of approach that dreaded cycle of burnout. And then we don't know what we're doing with our money. So we start living paycheck to paycheck. And then before you know it, you end up one of those people on the Facebook groups who are like, I hate OT. They don't make any money. And you're like, how did I become that person? And I think because, like I said, you have to have a good handle on what you're doing with your own finances. And money isn't everything, but money is definitely a tool that grants you more freedom, more flexibility, and being able to work and enjoy what you do. Like, now that I have such a better handle on my money, I can work with, like, I just work because I like it and I genuinely enjoy like what I do with the kids, but I'm not stressed out about putting food on the table or being able to afford the minimum on my student loan payment. So I think a lot of times it can be easy to say, well, is this something that therapists should really care about? Like, it doesn't really impact your practice, but I highly like challenge you to think about how can financial stress and hardship and that burden impact you and your ability to show up for yourself, your families, and your clients.
I love everything that you just said, because I completely agree that if you're going to work and you feel like you're being underpaid, you won't perform your job as well as you could.
I know quite a few therapists that I've worked with in the past who take on these huge caseloads that aren't feasible, aren't realistic.
But just to make the money.
Just because they need the money. Mm-hmm. And they're burnt out. They're not doing a great job. They're struggling mentally, physically. And I think that's such a good point to bring up. My goodness. Yes. Okay. Next thought. What is like the average amount of student loans that a new grad comes away with after school? I know it's different. Like, we've got OTRs, we've got OTDs, we've got CODAs, but what's like the average, would you say?
Yeah. So this is something that there are no good statistics on this, because I do a lot of research trying to stay on top of numbers like average income, you know, average salaries in different states and things. And I remember looking this up a little while ago, and there was like one article that threw out a number, but I was like, I don't think this is actually the average. So what I did, of course, I turned to Instagram and I actually polled my audience and I was like, hey, you know, if you don't mind sharing how much debt you came out with so that I can actually get some real numbers. And I mean, so many people answered, and it was a wide variety. I mean, of course, there were some people who didn't have any debt at all. And there were some people who had $300,000 of debt just from becoming an OT.
Jeez. Wow.
Yeah. So there's a significant range. I would say the majority is kind of around the 80,000, like to maybe mid 100,000s. There's not a lot in like the upper 100,000s, 200,000s, 300,000s. Mm-hmm. But there are definitely, there's a wide range, but I would say kind of around that, around 100K plus or minus a little bit on both sides.
That's insane to think about.
I know. It's just, it's so sad. I mean, that's a whole nother topic that I can't even like go into today, but it's so frustrating. Okay. So we know that we're all SOL basically when we come out of
school. Right.
So like, what are your first tips or your go-tos for new grads with these mountains of student loans?
Sit with how it feels.
Oh,
that's the first thing I'm going to say.
Amira.
Before you, I know.
Sit in that like depression for a minute.
You've got to sit there and you have to feel the feels. And I know this from experience because I graduated. So my program was 100 and my numbers all jumbled. Give me a second. My program was about $120,000 for 3 years. I got a scholarship, but I still came out of just OT school with about $180,000 in student loan debt. This does not include the interest. This does not include the capitalized interest, which is interest on top of interest, something they don't tell you about. Mm-hmm. This does not include my undergrad, and this doesn't include my private student loans. So I am over $200,000 in debt. But for the purposes of keeping it, I know, and I like listeners can't see your faces, but I can see your faces. And so when I was like terrified to face the number because I knew it was going to be a lot, but I was not expecting that much. Mm-hmm. And so I actually did not look at my student loan balance for months after I graduated. I was like, I can't do it. I can't see it right now. I can't think about it right now. I'm probably just going to die with this. So what's the point of even looking at it? And it was really my husband, boyfriend at the time. And we've always been super open about money. He has, and he's gotten me to be more and more open about money. But he was like, I really think that you should look at it. And I was like, I can't, I just can't do it. And he was like, you got to look at it. He was like, you can't get out of it until you look at it. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified. And I just remember that moment. And like, I might get emotional because it just makes me emotional to talk about. But I remember looking at that screen and seeing that number. And I started crying. I was sobbing and I was like so hysterical. And I was like, I'm never going to get out of this. And I just remember feeling that feeling and something kind of shifted in me. And I was like, I never want anyone, like the generations coming after me, to feel this way. I never want other OT students to have to deal with this, or SLP, PT students. I was like, this sucks. Like this feeling sucks. It feels like you're like staring at a mountain and you have to climb it and you don't even have the right shoes on because you don't have the tools to manage this, right? And so that was really a turning point for me, is actually just facing it. And so for anyone battling with their student loan debt, you have to face it, but you have to allow yourself to sit in those feelings because they're going to suck. And there's like no way around it. You're going to feel overwhelmed. You're going to feel angry. You're going to feel frustrated. But once you do that, I always say this, remind yourself that you did what you needed to do to get where you want it to be. And that's what I always tell myself. Yes, I took out those loans, but at the end of the day, I love what I get to do every day. So I'm not going to say necessarily it was worth it to go into that much debt. I could have done a cheaper path to become an OT, but you did what you needed to do. Or if you're a student, you're doing what you need to do to get where you want to be. So first tip, sit with it, sit with those feelings, cry it out. You guys know that like reel that says, what are you going to do? Like cry about or boss up? Cry first.
Cry
and
first.
Then, yeah. Then when you're ready, we can boss up together.
Yes. You're going to do both.
How do you even like fathom a number like that? I mean, I don't think that we as humans can even like recognize how much money that is. Like if we're just saying $200,000 is a round number, like no one has just like 200,000 bucks just laying around to like, oh, here's some money. Let me just go pay it all in cash. And you know, you can't just, I don't think that you can actually wrap your head around it.
And I think that's the problem. I think that's why I took it out. Because I knew I was going to have to pay it back, but like, what's that going to look like? I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Yeah. Nobody talks about that. And so I didn't know what that was going to look like monthly. And then I had to sit down and look at how much of my paycheck has to go towards loans now to pay this off within a reasonable amount of time. And once I saw that, I was like, like it's astronomical. I mean, so much, 50, 75% of your income that you're working so hard for is now being eaten up, A, in taxes, and B, in your student loan debt, because you want to get rid of it.
I'm just thinking about my student loan debt now too. And there was a time in my life,
after I graduated where I kind of did that same thing where I was like, nope, not going to look at it. Mm-hmm. I have no desire to see how much money I owe because it's not good.
It's scary.
Yeah. Okay. So you're also a big advocate for asking for, I don't know how to word this, how to like negotiate the pay that you want in a job. And so can you give us some tips on how therapists can do that?
Yeah. So, and I'll start by saying the reason that's so important is because, especially if you have that much student loan debt and you have figured out, I always encourage people, you've got to know a lot of numbers before you even really start your job search, because this might kind of dictate where you end up working. So if you know your monthly minimum payment, what that's going to be in order to just not the balance, not even increase on you, because if you're not at least covering the interest, it's going to increase on you. So you have to know that number first. So once you have that number, that really gives you a good idea of like, okay, well now how much money do I need to be bringing in per month? What's that going to look like per year after, you know, taxes and everything come out? So there's a lot of numbers that you just have to know before I think you even start your job search, so that you know kind of what is the salary range that you should be going for. So once you've had that figured out, you know, you get your job, you get your job offer, you're looking at it. And if the number is not where you need it to be, you have to negotiate. Even if the number is where it should be or above where it should be, you have to negotiate. You still have to negotiate. I am 100%. If you come to me and you ask me any situation, should I negotiate this? My answer will always be yes. Because if you don't ask, like, I don't know about you guys, but I grew up on the phrase, closed mouths don't get fed. So like, you don't know if you don't ask. So it might be a no, but it could also be a yes. So you definitely want to ask. And there's a lot of negotiation tips out there. Kind of my top ones are always do your negotiating in writing. So if they ever call you and say like, oh, you know, we're eager to offer you this job, don't negotiate over the phone, because A, that's going to catch you way off guard. You're not going to have time to kind of look at the job offer letter so you can, you know, thank them for the opportunity. So you're really excited about potentially working there. And then you say, you know, would you be able to send me the copy of the written job offer letter? Here's the best email for me. Mm-hmm. And then ask, you know, is there like a deadline where you have to get back to them or something like that? So if they catch you off guard with a phone or even in-person offer, always make sure to do your negotiating in writing. That's going to save you a lot of stress when it comes to negotiating versus doing it, you know, face-to-face.
For sure.
It's a great idea.
Quick break from today's episode. Did you know that we have a brand new course that's available?
You probably didn't, so that's why we're going to talk about it really quick. If you've been around us for a while, you know we already have two digital courses, one on sensory diets and one on primitive reflexes.
So this new course is called Improving Behavior and Focus in the Classroom, and we are diving into sensory strategies into the classroom for teachers, educators, paraprofessionals, and therapists.
So our goal is to help foster inclusion for every child in a school setting. And this is step one, getting the knowledge into the hands of those who need it most.
So you can learn more by clicking the link in the show notes of this episode, or you can head to harkla.co and you can check it out and get started.
Okay, let's go back to the episode.
I'm just thinking about all the things. And I just feel like when you come out of school and you're like, I just need a job. I don't care how much I'm making. I just need a job. But I think that's so helpful to have in the back of your mind, how much you have to pay on your student loans, how much you have for rent or for your mortgage, how much you need for food and gas, like those necessities. Would you feel like it's appropriate to say to the employer, look, I'm paying $1,000 a month in student loans. I can't take this offer. I won't be able to pay off my student loan debt. Like, do you feel like that's an appropriate thing to bring up to a future employer?
So this is a really good question. Employers, we have to think about it too from the business side, which now that I'm a business owner, I do look at things from the business side. And so if they are not able to pay you more, it could be because they genuinely don't have that stretch in their budget. So coming to them with the emotion, I always say you got to take the emotion actually out of it. So not really appealing to their emotion, but appealing to the logic. So this is why you're going to research, well, how much money do they bring in every time like I see a client? So that's something I knew before I even went on my early intervention job interview. Now I was still pretty early in starting out my money journey, but by this time I had faced my student loan debt and I was like, all right, so I know what I have to be bringing in. So I started kind of looking around to see you know, what kind of companies are out there in my area? How much can I expect to be making? And so I actually found our billing manual. So I knew every time that I see a kiddo in early intervention, this is how much the company gets paid. So when you're doing your negotiating, sticking to logic, so sticking to the facts and the figures versus the emotion, because they might be more moved. They're likely going to be more moved by you presenting the facts versus trying to kind of appeal to that emotional nature. Again, that entirely depends on maybe it's like a small mom and pop shop and like, you know, therapy company, and they are really moved by emotion. But in general, I have had the most success, and the people that I have coached and, you know, mentored on this have had the most success when they get those facts and figures. So you want to figure out, you know, what is the average pay for the state that you're in, the setting that you're in, the region, you know, all of that stuff. And then you're going to put that into that email when you're negotiating. Okay. So sticking again to those like the facts, the figures, and kind of leaving that emotion aside for now. And that's how, I think that's how you can be a lot more successful.
And that makes, that makes perfect sense.
Totally.
For sure.
Here, I'm like, oh, please, I need,
I know,
I can't afford my loans. Don't do that, everyone. No, listening. Yeah, don't do that.
All right. I want you to tell us more about the Miracle Money Blueprint.
Oh, the blueprint is my baby. It is the program that I have been working on for months, and we are now well underway. But the Miracle Money Blueprint, I kind of say, is the money 101 course that they forgot to give us in grad school, because it essentially covers, it's a comprehensive program that really takes you from feeling overwhelmed, confused, and lost, being able to more confidently manage your money and get started with everything that you need to be able to just successfully navigate the financial side of adulting, because nobody teaches us how to do that. So I have taken, like I said, I've done a lot of research, but I've also taken like my own personal finance courses specific to actually investing. That's the area that I wanted to make sure that I felt really strong in. So I've taken investing courses. I've done, books and podcasts, YouTubes, blogs, like you name it under the sun, I have probably read it at some point or taken it. So I have basically taken all that information over the past, you know, two or so years that I've been kind of on this personal finance journey and synthesize it into this program. So it includes a 5-week course where we talk through, first we talk through how to overcome your mindset, because so much of money work is mindset work. So we're talking financial goal setting and, you know, reshifting the relationship that we have with our money. We're facing our numbers in that first lesson, in that first module. So I have everyone pull up their student loan balance. We're going to actually look at it. We're going to work through it. We're going to sit in those feelings, and then we're going to move past it. From there, I teach kind of three main areas. So how to maximize your income. So this includes negotiation, where they get like a whole negotiation script to be able to confidently negotiate in writing. You get the email templates, how to ask for a raise, how to figure out where you can make the most money. So really focusing on first how to maximize your income, because regardless of what your financial goals are, you likely are going to need more money. So figuring out how can I absolutely maximize my income. From there, we talk about how to prioritize your paycheck. So you've gotten paid, what the heck do you do with this money? And we talk about the three big areas to focus on. So saving, and then also paying off your student loan debt, and then kind of starting to learn about investing. And the fourth module, which is my absolute favorite, is investing 101. So I teach you exactly everything that I know. I open up my own investment accounts and talk about what's inside of it. How did I pick what's inside of it? How to open these accounts, the pros, the cons, the benefits, you know, how you can actually retire as a millionaire earning the traditional OT, PT, SOP salary, which no one really talks about, but it's 100% possible. And then the last one is just kind of wrapping everything up and living what I call the miracle money lifestyle, where you've got that balance. You're working towards your debt, you're working towards your goals, but you're also having fun along the way and treating yourself. So it's a comprehensive, like I said, program. You've got a course. We do group coaching calls together. We do bonus workshops. You get lots of like templates and things like that. But you know, that's what you get. But really the transformation is taking you again from feeling lost, like you don't know what the heck you're doing with your money, to being able to just confidently feel strong in those money management habits.
I know. I'm like, oh man, that actually does sound good. Especially the investing part for me, at least, because investing, I don't know.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, it is.
Is it just for therapists, or do you think other professions, other people could benefit as well?
It's for anyone. Really, there's only one lesson specific to OTs, and it talks about how I was able to maximize my income to earn what I've been able to earn as a new-ish graduate. everything else is highly applicable to literally, like, my mom has been like, I kind of want to take your course. I feel like I need to learn some of this stuff. So yeah, it's 100%, you know, available and open to literally anyone who just wants to do better with their money. But of course, I have that perspective of understanding what it has taken to get to this point as a therapist. And so my lens is, I think, a little bit different than some of the other personal finance educators out there. So that's why it's, you know, it's geared and everything towards therapists, but the information inside of it, the content inside of it is 100%, you know, open to everyone. And it's fun. Oh my God. It's like fun. We're having fun.
Now with y'all while you're doing your coaching. Like, this sounds,
oh my gosh, yes.
Done like a certain number of times a year. So it's a live coaching program,
for
like
5 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. So we are actually in our first cohort right now. So I have some members inside and we have like a Facebook community that I call the Miracle Money Squad. And we hang out in there. We talk about our goals. We talk about our wins. We hold each other accountable. So you have access to that community for life. Like, you can come in there, ask your questions. I'm in there to hang out with you. We all know, like, Instagram, it's just hard to stay on Instagram because the algorithm, the attention's fleeting, like, it's just really hard. So it's nice to have a space to have these conversations together and just kind of build this community. But you have access to the 5 week course for life. I mean, yeah, for life. You have access to the Facebook group for life, and then you have access to 3 months of live coaching calls. And then you have an opportunity to kind of join the membership aspect of it and keep coming to coaching calls for as long as you need. And then there's 4 bonus workshops where we're breaking down all of your student loan options. So PSLF, refinancing, consolidation. We're talking about passive income ideas, how to build and monetize on social media, and then independent contracting. So things that are just kind of, you know, not part of the core areas of the main course, but they're things that are definitely going to complement what you're learning. And like, the whole premise of this is being able to do all of this without having to jump into business right away, without having to open a private practice, without having to have multiple streams of income, because I think that is not the most feasible or realistic when you're just starting out. So I teach you what you can do from your very first paycheck as a new grad without all of that. But then if you want to learn about that, like, we can talk about it. I can point you in the direction of some phenomenal OT entrepreneurs out there. But really, you know, the people inside right now, they are, you know, approaching graduation or have just graduated. Some of them are students and they're just like crushing it and getting a leg up on all of this stuff. But it's so much fun. Like, I have had the best time being able to create it and then actually just, you know, hang out with everyone inside of it.
Yeah. And, you know, listeners can't see your face, but you just have like this beaming smile and you can tell you're so passionate about it, which is awesome.
Yeah. You got really excited when we brought it up.
I love it.
I also think that it's important that you brought it up, that you can still have a life and you can still have fun. I remember years ago, I'd listened to Dave Ramsey's podcast, like, all day, every day. And it was like,
oh, I saw her face.
I know, major eye roll. But it was like, no, you're living on rice and beans. You can't do anything. You just snowball all of your money. And I was like, yeah, right. Like,
no, I remember I did like a free course thing from him, from Dave Ramsey. And he was like, don't put any money towards trips, or all of your extra money should go to pay off your loans. And I'm like, that sounds terrible. Like, yeah, I'm going to put some money towards my loans, but I still want to travel and buy things. Like, I cannot do that.
I have so many thoughts.
I wish that
I can't even get into all the thoughts that I
know. I wish everyone could.
What I will say is, I know. I cannot tell you how much I disagree with that. And I think the reason is because, so I did start off with Dave Ramsey when I first started, and I like binged his podcast and I went listen to it driving around in early intervention, and I felt like crap. I was like, I am like terrible with my money. And I think we have to be very careful of the difference between financial tough love, which I'm going to give. Like, I give the members financial tough love in the blueprint, but I also am not money shaming. And there is a huge rhetoric to this money shaming where we say, like, I remember hearing, like, you shouldn't see the inside of a restaurant unless you're washing the dishes there. And I was like, what?
Sounds
like,
terrible.
I worked hard to where I have gotten. Like, I wouldn't be able to go treat myself. So, like, that's the whole thing that I focus on the program is, you know, financial balance, being able, you can do it all, but you have to be strategic. That's why we start out with maximizing our income. We know our numbers. And then focusing on those 3 priority areas. Once those priority areas are met, like, I teach them, you've got those areas met, your budget can then fluctuate. You want to give more to getting facials like I do? I get facials every 6 weeks. I go get a facial and I don't feel bad about it. We have guilt-free, shame-free spending. So, I mean, it's so important to know that like you can meet your financial goals and you can be on track, but you can also still live your life and enjoy the fruits of your labor because you worked hard to get to where you are. So you should enjoy your money 100%.
Yeah, you should have fun with your money because you earned it, you know, for that reason.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
I also like how you brought up the multiple streams of income and how you don't have to have that to be successful, paying off your loans, but also spending your money, because so many people out there just have, you know, just one job and they don't want more than one job. They just want to focus on the one thing. So.
Yep. Which is what I'm doing. I mean, yes, now I'm a business owner and I'm independent contracting, but I did not start off with all, I mean, I have only done this for the past year, maybe with like running an actual business and being an independent contractor. But you know, my first year and a half, I was just working in early intervention. I say just, but like, that's still a huge thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so the majority of the money that I make in early intervention, like that's what's going towards those financial goals. Anything that I make with like the business on the side, as you all know, it typically gets reinvested back into the business anyways, and you don't see a lot of it anyways. But you know, that's the stuff that's kind of like my play money. Like, yes, sometimes it goes towards an extra student loan payment. And then sometimes I decide to go get my nails done. Who knows? So, I mean, you can absolutely build wealth and start building wealth without having a business, without having multiple streams of income. I mean, and also you have to have a good handle on your personal finances before you can navigate business finances, which is kind of what I'm learning about more and more now. And if I didn't have a strong handle on what I'm doing just personally, there's no way that I'd be able to navigate business finances. So you have to start with the personal finances either way.
For yes, sure.
Love yes. that. Can you tell us a little bit more about your independent contractor journey, how you got there and treating early intervention kiddos contractor-wise?
Yeah. So for me, it was a pretty smooth shift. I started independent contracting about 6 months after I graduated with a pediatric home health company just to kind of get my feet wet. So that's how I ended up having the LLC, Marvelous Miracles Pediatric Therapy. And I only saw like a couple kids, maybe two or three in that position. And then last October with my early intervention position, I shifted 100% into independent contracting. And there's a lot of reasons why I did this. I wanted to maximize my income and I started learning about taxes. And the key here is being able to keep, yes, I was making pretty good money with early intervention, but I was losing a lot of it because the more you make, the more Uncle Sam ends up taking. So I was like, okay, wait a minute. Like, how can I actually reduce my taxable income? In came having an LLC. And I was like, all right, I think this is the route I should go. And just, you know, with my early intervention position, I didn't have a lot of benefits at all, actually. Like, I didn't have a retirement plan. And as I started learning about investing in retirement accounts, I was like, I need to be working more for myself so that I can have more access to some of these like tax advantages and being able to actually have a retirement account. So that's a couple reasons. There were a lot of other reasons that I shifted. But so I'm still with the same company. I'm just treated a little bit differently. I'm not an employee. I'm now an independent contractor. And so everything runs through my own business, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. We know that you are in a little bit of a time constraint because you got other things to do, but can you give us a couple of tips for investing while also paying off loans?
Yes, I love this. So, big also message that I preach that other financial educators that we have mentioned do not preach and tells you that you should do. And that is something that completely changed. I actually attended like a free investing webinar with this phenomenal woman. Her name is Deli and the Money Coach. I highly, highly recommend you follow Deli and the Money Coach on Instagram. She also has an investing course that is amazing. And she opened my eyes and I realized, oh wait, I can actually do both at the same time. And the reason you can do both at the same time is because you are simultaneously building wealth by decreasing your student loan debt, but also increasing your investments. So you're decreasing your liabilities, you're increasing your assets, which means you're increasing your net worth. So it works out. So yeah, there are some kind of stipulations and things like that, like depending on how much your interest rate is on your loans. I typically say you're safe if your loans are anything about less than 5-7%. As long as that's your interest rate, then you're going to be okay to do both. And most federal loans are below that 7% interest rate. So that's kind of the first thing. But as long as you are in, you know, less than that 7%, again, that's just kind of my personal rule of thumb, but some people have it a little bit higher, some people have it a little bit lower. So my personal rule of thumb is if you are under 7% or less in your interest rate for your student loans, you can invest. So the first area that you're really going to start focusing on is your employer-sponsored plan or your employer-sponsored retirement account. For many of us, that's going to be the 401k, but it could also be what's called like a 403b, which is just if you work in nonprofit. And there's a lot of, you know, other stuff that goes along with that, but there's different types of plans, but you're going to see if you have an employer sponsored retirement account. If you do, if you have that, you want to see if you have a match. So this is when you hear like 2% or 3%. And the thing is, you can put in up to 3% of your salary, and then your employer will also put in 3% into your retirement account, which then is going to get to grow at a rate of 7 to 10%. That's why you'll commonly hear it called free money, because you're putting in a little bit and then your employer is putting in a little bit, but all of it gets to grow. So that's always the first place that I say start off with, is if you have that plan. I did not have that plan, so I had to look into what's called individual retirement accounts. And I know I'm throwing a lot of words out here, listeners, but this is when you're going to do that research, do that homework. You hear something and you're like, okay, let me go look that up. So if you have an employer sponsored plan, you're going to, you know, see if you're eligible for that, contribute to that. And if not, you're going to look for an individual retirement account.
Is that an IRA?
That is an IRA. So you might have, it is an IRA. So you have two options there. There's a Roth IRA and there's a traditional IRA. And the difference between the two boils down to taxes, basically. It's you pay taxes now or you pay taxes later, but at some point you got to pay taxes on the money. So which, that's really the big difference between the two.
Which do you recommend, pay taxes now or pay taxes later?
Ooh, okay. Well, now I have to throw out my really boring disclaimer that I am not a certified financial planner, financial advisor, or professional financial anything, you know, legal service, tax advice. I can give to you, but I can give to you my recommendation. So I recommend looking at a Roth IRA. So this is the one that I started out with. The Roth IRA, you put in money post-tax. So like after the taxes have came out and everything, so you get your paycheck, let's say your paycheck's $2,000, you can take out of there $100 and put it into your Roth IRA. The nice thing is that that money gets to grow tax-free. And then when you're ready to take it out in retirement, you don't pay taxes on it. Mm-hmm. So this is really nice because so many of us start out in kind of this lower tax bracket. So you're paying less taxes up front, and then maybe you'll be in a higher tax bracket come retirement, and then you don't have to worry about paying so much later. So yes. I like the Roth IRA. That's the one that I had when I started out. I've now switched to a SEP IRA, which is kind of same thing, but it's just for self-employed people. So I highly, highly recommend and encourage looking into the Roth IRA again, because you get the taxes out of the way now, but you're really not paying as much now because you're going to be a lower tax bracket, just knowing where we kind of start out with as therapists.
That makes perfect sense.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm ready for the miracle.
Oh, and I do have to say with a Roth IRA, this is literally how you can retire as a millionaire clinician. So the contribution limit for this is $6,000 per year, which is not too much if you are managing your money. It's about $500 a month, $6,000 a year. If you contribute to this account in some low cost, they're called index funds. That's what you actually can look up, like best index funds to contribute to. And then you contribute to that $6,000 a year for the next 40 years, that account will grow to about $1.2 million. And there's a lot of different investment retirement growth calculators and things out there, but that account is like gold. It is so nice. And then you have all that money that you've already paid taxes, so you get to just pull from it without having to pay taxes.
Boom.
It's really nice.
Okay. She's not providing financial advice. She's just
not financial advice.
But clearly it's accurate.
I love it.
Yes.
Excellent. So good. Now,
thank you.
Real quick, I want you to share real quick about your EI program that you're doing with a couple of other awesome therapists.
Yes. So we started the Real OTs of Early Intervention. What is it? A little over a year ago now.
The Real World.
The Real OTs. Yes, it's a play. It's with Sarah Putt and Danielle DiLorenzo, OT for Life and Mornings with an OT Mom on Instagram, respectively. And so they used to joke about being like the Real Housewives because they were from Jersey and, oh, I can't remember where Sarah's from now.
I think
I can't remember. I think Cali. Cali. Yeah. I know she lives in Cali, but I think she's from there too. So I think that's why they used to joke and say the Real Housewives. So they started saying like the Real OTs. So when I came into the group, that's when we became like the Real OTs of early intervention, and we're sharing the realities of early intervention. And so we have a podcast, we have a blog, we have a website, we have an Instagram page, and we just share the good, the bad, the ups and the downs of working in early intervention. And you know, we talk through questions that people have about getting started in this practice setting, and we all have these unique lens. So Sarah has a private practice in early intervention. I started in early intervention as a new grad, and then Danielle has actually went through early intervention as a parent because her son was in early intervention. He's neurodivergent. And so it's really cool to just have all of these different lenses and experiences, but we all have, you know, the same love and same passion for early intervention.
So cool.
And we will link all of the things in the show notes so that everyone can check out everything that you're doing, plus all the other things. There's so many things.
So would you say,
there's a lot.
Would you say the easiest way to get a hold of you is through Instagram?
Instagram or email.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Great.
And you do coaching, so we can put your, do you do coaching on the side, or is it all through the Miracle Money Blueprint?
Good question. So I did do coaching last year for a couple of months, but I have stopped coaching for kind of the general public. And now I only do coaching inside of the Miracle Money Blueprint. So that is the best way, the only really way to work with me. You can still send me a question on DM, but I'm not always super responsive on there just because these members have, they've made this huge commitment. They've made this investment in themselves. And so they are absolutely right now my top priority of, you know, being able to support them on this journey. So that's the best way to work with me, the best way to have direct access to me. I mean, they leave me a question and I'll respond like right away in there. We do the group coaching calls, but then they also have access to one-on-one coaching calls if they want that too.
I love that. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I'm excited.
I know. You're a rock star.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. If you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would it be?
I have one that I have been thinking about so much lately, and it's, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be perfect when it comes to being a therapist, when it comes to getting your money together, just when it comes to your morning routine. Nothing about life is perfect. And I think we place so much emphasis on trying to get things perfect. I mean, even me with the Miracle Money Blueprint, I was like, but it's not perfect yet. And you know what? It is perfect for everyone inside of it. And it will never absolutely be perfect. There will always be upgrades to make and tweaks that I want to change. My finances will never be perfect. I'll never be the perfect money coach. I'll never be the perfect early interventionist, but you are good and you are good enough. And I think just making sure to remember that, and remember that done is better than perfect. It's better to get something out there. You can always change it later, but it's better to just get started today. And that comes even with getting your money together. You don't have to get it started perfectly. I mean, the first like fund that I invested in my investment account was like not the perfect one, and that's okay. I started learning, and then I invested in something different, but I started. That's all that matters. So just start, even if it's not perfect.
Yep.
So good.
Exactly. Oh, you just have to do it.
Okay. Just gotta do it. Before we let you go, do you have any questions for us? I'm waiting for you to be like, now what accounts are you investing in right now?
No, I always like to ask this question. What is kind of your definition of wealth?
Ooh.
What does it mean to live a wealthy life to you?
So it's actually an interesting question that you asked us that. So I was listening to Tim Ferriss' podcast a while ago, and he interviewed someone. I don't remember who it was, but they talked about money. And the guy was talking about, you know, what a rich life or wealthy life looks like for you, and how you can list off things that you already have or already do with your money that make you happy, but also list off the things that if you were more wealthy, you would do with your life. And so I actually like took that advice and I made a whole list of all the things that like I do now, but that I also want to do in the future that would mean that I have a rich life. And for me, one of them was tipping at restaurants and bars, like tipping more than the average person. And so anytime I'm out, I'm like, oh, you know what? These guys gave me great service. They brought me my food or they bought me my drinks. I'm going to tip them way more than they expect they're going to get. So that's the big one for me.
I love that.
I love going out. I love going out to eat. I love going out and getting drinks. And so if I'm going to do that, I'm going to show that I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's mine.
That's cool.
I love that.
I feel like mine would just be kind of boring. I feel like just not having to stress about money, just mm-hmm. not having to stress, just knowing that it's going where it needs to go automatically. And to know that if, you know, the toilet flooded and we had to replace the entire bathroom, like we could do that and it wouldn't be a burden. So I think that would be my, first thought. That was the first thing that came to head.
I like
that too.
I love that. No, that's not boring at all. And I think that
that really sums up. I've been over here.
Hey, you know,
for me, mine is being able to get a vacuum. So actually, there was a vacuum I had my eye on, the Dyson, the 11 animal, and I was like, I really want this vacuum. And I got the vacuum, and I just felt so good. I was like, this makes my life easier. I have a part husky dog. There's hair everywhere all the time. And I wanted a really nice vacuum, so I'm with you. That's not boring.
Hashtag adulting. Yeah, seriously. Really excited.
Right? Yeah. I know. And you just, I mean, that's really it. That's the whole sum of this conversation is looking at money as a tool. There's nothing taboo about talking about it. There's nothing wrong with you if you want more of it, because money is a tool. And so you have to think about what does a wealthy look like to you? And then how can you use money to get there?
That's where I help.
That's perfect.
You are just a breath of fresh air. It's been so fun chatting with you.
I know. I'm really excited. I was just so excited when I was looking through Instagram and I was like, Amira is doing this whole new thing. We need to have her back on the podcast because look at this.
It's awesome.
I love it. It was so good to be back. And this is the first like podcast focused just on what I've been doing with money. So it was really cool to get to talk about it so much today.
Yes. Love super it. Stoked. Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We're going to let you go so that you can go get your next treatment session done.
Thanks, dear.
Thank you both.
We'll see you later.
Bye.
All right.
I learned a lot this episode and I feel like I have a fire lit under my butt to talk more about money and finances and figure it out.
I'm so excited for the next round of her course because chances are I'm going to be in there. I think I need it. I want it.
Gotta have it.
But also make sure you're following her on Instagram because she posts so much information on her Instagram. She posts reels that are fun and engaging and informative, and then also in her stories. So I'm spending a lot of time on her page recently, actually. So
she's just awesome. She's fun. She's just contagious and you just want to learn from her. And it's cool hearing her journey on how she started. I mean, she just started Googling and figured it out. And
she's a researcher. She's a researcher at heart for
sure.
She's
a doctor of OT.
Oh, that's why.
Amira, we adore you.
Yes, we're so thankful. Everything will be linked in the show notes. So you can find everything down there in the show notes to start exploring your own financial journey.
We would love it if you'd leave a review on iTunes. Let us know your thoughts on this niche topic with Amira and leave some stars, leave your comments. We love to read those and we'll plan on chatting with y'all next week.
Oh, really quick. Oh. We also love when you screenshot episode and tag us. So make sure you do that. Tag us at All Things Sensory Podcast, but also make sure you tag Amira's Instagram as well.
Okay. Now we'll chat with you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla.
If you want more information on anything mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get the show notes.
If you have any follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is @harkla_family or @allthingssensorypodcast. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us there.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla. Whether it's for one of our digital courses or one of our sensory swings, the discount code SENSORY will get you 10% off. That's SENSORY.
Head to harkla.co/sensory to use that discount code right now.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world. While we make every effort to share correct information, we're still learning.
We will double check all of our facts, but realize that medicine is a constantly changing science and art.
One doctor or therapist may have a different way of doing things from another.
We are simply presenting our views and opinions on how to address common sensory challenges, health-related difficulties, and what we have found to be beneficial that will be as evidence-based as possible.
By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or your child.
Consult your child's pediatrician or therapist for any medical issues that he or she may be having.
This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast.
Thanks so much for listening.